Hello, everybody. It's Corey Huff from The Abundant Artist. If you can hear me, type hello in the chat or the questions. Give it a few seconds for that to show up. There it is. All right. Hello, Dee. Hello, Beth, Carol, Chico, Colleen, bunch of people joining us. Excellent. People from all over. Regina. All right. Thank you so much for being here, everybody. I want to take a moment to introduce to you our panelists for today. I, of course, am Corey Huff from theabundantartist.com, and I want to introduce you to Leonardo and Catherine. Leonardo, I featured on the podcast a few weeks ago. Leonardo came on and talked about the enormous following that he has on YouTube between his English and Spanish language channels. Leonardo's an artist based in Mexico City. Is that right? Yep.
Monterrey, Mexico.
Monterrey. Okay. And then Catherine Orr is based in Quebec. Is that right?
Yes, Montreal, Quebec.
Yep. And Catherine is a PR professional for artists. She trained, worked in a bunch of, I don't know if it's a bunch, but worked in some art galleries in Paris and trained in through the Christie's program there. So I'm excited to have the two of them on here today to talk about art and leadership. If you do have questions about what it means to be a leader as an artist, feel free to type those questions into the chat. I'll be monitoring the chat throughout the conversation today. We do have some jumping off points and some things that we're going to talk about here. So I'll just start us off by asking you both, what does it mean to be a leader as an artist? Leonardo, why don't we start with you? What do you think about that question?
Sure. Good question. And hi to everybody. I think that has a lot to do with have the courage to do what you love to do. Mm-hmm. And this is very evident in artists. I think every person should do what they love and what is right. And if we can lead other people or help them do that themselves, do what is right for them, do what they love, I think that's one of the main points of being a leader as an artist, and show by example, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. You shared this great quote with me when we were talking about this and getting ready, and it's from George Bernard Shaw, who is one of my personal favorite playwrights. And he says, "Without art, the crudeness of reality would make the world unbearable." Why did you share that? Why did you share that quote with me?
Because I think it's very true. And I think one of the reasons I was very interested to be with you here is because I think artists don't realize the power of art, power that they have in their hands. That quote is so true. And I'm sure you have seen it, each of you in your own lives, how a work of art can change your day or your mood after a long day with a lot of problems. You hear a piece of incredible music or see a sculpture or a painting, and instantly you are in a different mood. You enhance that. That goes directly to your soul or to you as a person, and it gets you out of any problems or anything faster than anything else in the world, either speech or anything else. And that's the power of art. You can really change people with it. And I think most artists don't realize that, the power that it has.
Yeah. Catherine, what do you think? What does it mean to be a leader as an artist?
Well, at first I have to say I agree with everything that Leonardo said. And I think people who are not artists, well, we all have a creative side in us, but let's say professional artists, we are all drawn to artists, right? And artists don't realize that, how all of the rest of us are drawn, and we're so interested in knowing all the why and the story and everything you have to share, your message, right? So as an artist, you have this opportunity, this voice to share your vision, this audience, these people who are willing to listen and to follow you. So as an artist, you can really use this opportunity to empower others, really, because as a leader, you have this mission or this possibility to empower others, to rally others around your vision, your ideas, and you have this great forum to communicate it, which a lot of people don't have this opportunity to do.
Yes, I love that response, Catherine. So something that stuck out to me that as the two of you were talking, that art itself is so powerful, right? Like it can have such a big impact on our lives. But something that sticks out to me is that a lot of times artists don't realize the power that they have.
Exactly.
Right? Like you created this thing that has so much emotional resonance for somebody. And when somebody identifies so strongly with a piece of art, the person who created that piece of art can be seen as an almost mythical figure. And and for us, for the people who make art, it's like, oh yeah, like I made that thing, but like I made that a year ago and my mind has moved on to this other thing.
Could be better.
Yeah, like it could be better. Yeah, exactly what you just said, Leonard. Oh yeah, it could be better. Like it has these flaws. Yeah.
Exactly, Corey. When you're done with your art, it's out there in the world. It's not yours anymore. So you're already ready for something else. Mm-hmm. But when you put it into the world, it's all for us to receive. Mm-hmm. And we get it, and we want to understand your message. And when we get to connect with the artist, because often contemporary art is not, you know, so easy for everyone to understand unless they really get to connect with the artist and really understand their message.
And hear and the story, yep.
Hear the story, and that's when the magic happens and ultimately the sale.
Yep. So I want to ask everybody that's in the audience, all of you that are listening today, why do you think that you have that you might have a hard time embracing that power that you have as an artist? I would love to go ahead and type your answers into the chat or the questions there. I want to hear from you. Why do you struggle with embracing the power you have as an artist? And I'll ask that same question for the two of you. Why do you think that artists struggle so much with embracing that role or title?
I go?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think they just don't know, they don't have the information, the power that art has, as I was saying. And if I can, while people type their questions, I would like to share a very short story.
Yeah, go ahead.
About the power of art that happened to me. With my paintings and sculptures, one time I did a very large exhibit and invited all my friends and invited a woman who I have seen once and came with her husband. And they were looking around and then this woman told me, look at my husband. And I looked and he was talking to other people and he looked pretty normal to me. And she said, no, look at him. He is such an introvert. He wants to never go out, never talk to people. It's the first time that I see him talking to strangers happily. And then he kept on during the night for a few hours, and they left. They bought me three pieces, and she went home. And next day she called me, and she told me, this is incredible. My husband was blown out at the exhibit. It was the first time he went to an art exhibit in his life. Mm-hmm. And then we went to dinner with friends, and he was just happy, speaking to everybody, joking. He was better than in his better times when we were young. And he thanked me for this. I was amazed.
Amazing story.
Yes. Next day, she went with her daughters and told her, yesterday we went to an exhibit with your dad. Said, yes, Mom. Dad told us everything about it for the past hour. So it was such an impact. I don't know how much this lasted, if it did, but that's the power that can have. Imagine if instead of seeing these ugly things in the news, in life, in the cities, our life was surrounded by gorgeous art. Mm-hmm. We could change the world instantly because the level of society will rise instantly. And mm-hmm. that's the power that I don't think we realize. If we unite as artists and do something like this purposely, we can change things, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we've got some good responses rolling in here. Catherine, I want to get to you in just a second. I want to hear what you have to say.
Sure.
But Regina Sid says, as a matter of fact, I've never thought about that. from the perspective of power. I've never thought about, and I'm assuming that what she's saying is, I've never thought about the fact that I have a lot of power as an artist. How would you respond to that, Catherine?
I think you're not the only one. I think it's I don't want to speak for artists, but I've been in contact with many artists throughout the past few years, and I can say that there's like a confidence issue sometimes, an imposter syndrome also. Who am I to tell my story? Who would be interested in what I have to say? Mindset, you know, like often we've been raised to be and being told that, you know, it's not really going to happen for you and you should go get a real job. So so all these things, you know, we learn from what we see, from what we hear, and we think, okay, well, who am I to really be out there and say what I think? But yes, you should, and you should get involved, and you should demonstrate leadership, because we need positive leadership. We don't have enough positive leadership, like Leonardo was saying. So being out there and sharing your story, that's how you're really going to connect with a tribe of people who are going to just want to know more about you and create a movement, ultimately.
Yeah. There's this comment from D. Nag, and this is something that hits really close to home for me. It says, it's absolutely nerve-wracking being an artist and presenting or revealing your creation, your soul, in front of an audience for others to view and judge. Obviously, that depends on the art you create. I'm a documentary filmmaker and photographer. When I first screen a film, I'm a nervous wreck. It's different when I present my photography. D, I totally get this. As a performance artist, it's a very strange experience to get in front of an audience and cry and scream and laugh and, you know, let all of that out, especially because I do a lot of Shakespeare and classical theater, which is very emotional and very big. And then after the show, you like walk out into the lobby to leave, and there's a bunch of people that want to stand there and shake your hand and tell you that they enjoyed your performance. And on the one hand, it's gratifying that they want to congratulate me and tell me they enjoyed it. But on the other hand, I'm kind of like, I'm feeling a little emotional right now. I feel a little awkward, like, or like you said, Leonardo, you know, I really could have done that better. Like, I'm glad that you enjoyed it, but from my perspective, and so separating our own artistic process and our own experience with the art from the audience's reception of it, it's, I think, a challenge to separate those two. Do you two have any insights on how to separate your own experience with the art from the reception of it?
Well,
Catherine, you go first. Yeah.
I don't think you need to separate it. I think you need to embrace it. I think you need to embrace it and learn to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, basically. You know, like saying, okay, it's what I'm putting out there, I'm putting out all my best, and how it's going to be received once it's out there, I have no control over it. And you just have to embrace it and get comfortable, because it never ends. You're always going to be, like, performance artists will always tell you that they're always nervous, right, Corey? You're always nervous. Even if you do a show 20 times, you're always going to be nervous. I work with artists that have been working for 30 years, and they're always nervous before they unveil their latest work. So even when I do a webinar, I'm nervous before, and it's normal, and that's what makes it even better, because it shows that you care. If you weren't nervous and if you weren't uncomfortable, it means you don't really care about what you're putting out.
You don't really respect the people, that you're not putting your heart into your work.
Exactly. So you just need to learn to embrace it and learn to be comfortable in being uncomfortable, I think.
Yeah. Jeremy Hardy says, you guys are right on the mark. And he also says, maybe they're introverted or afraid of rejection. I think that being introverted is part of it, Jeremy. I think that we've maybe used the word introvert as a bit of an excuse. There is certainly being an introvert, you know, if you go with the Susan Cain definition of introvert, introverts are people who need to be alone to recharge, and being around other people and interacting with people sort of drains them of energy. That's the classic definition of introvert. But I don't think you can say being an introvert is a good excuse not to show your work or not to get in front of people. What do you think, Leonardo?
Yeah, I have to say I admire you and I admire performing artists and musicians because they really need to face the public. And that thing, I think that's very tough. Us as a fine artist, we don't necessarily have to do that. If we make mistakes in our creation process, we don't need to show those. We show our best pieces, and we don't even need to show up if we don't want to, mm-hmm. per se. So I think it's a much easier for us. As far as the criticism and all of that, I personally try to not take it personal. There is a lot of constructive criticism on what people say, and I have learned a lot, and I am better because I do listen to what people have to say in their critics. Mm-hmm. And we have to understand that there is also destructive criticism of people who really just go there to destroy you. And you need to see it as it is and lightly, with a light heart.
What do you think of the idea of the artist's work being one half of a dialogue with the audience? Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Are you referring to contemporary art or in general?
In art in general. I personally think that art is, if we're putting ourselves into our work and something that really, if we're making work that really matters to us personally, we're putting that out there and we're saying something. Hopefully we're saying something with our art. And then people have their reactions to it. And then maybe the next thing that comes out of the artist is the next piece of the conversation. What do you think about that idea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally true. And I think when a piece of art, if it's realistic, if you finish it completely, it hinders, like technical perfection sometimes hinders that conversation. When you leave something undone or something like that, it creates more conversation. And I think that's very important because art fundamentally is communication. And when there is communication in both ways, then it's fabulous. It's the ideal. Yeah. And by the way, Corey, I have to tell you, people interpret my work in so many days, which are beautiful, make stories behind of them, mm-hmm. that very often I have taken those stories, and next time that I present my art, I say, this was my inspiration. I take a full story, which actually shows nobody else told me in the last exhibition. I didn't think anything when I created my piece. I just made it. But that communication then, yeah, as you say, influences me on the next creation and is part of my career, the backfield. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that many times working in art galleries during events where the artist was present, and you have people who are coming to see the work and the artist is there and these conversations that happen and hearing the artist say, oh my God, I've never even thought of that, but it's so true. You just inspired me for my next piece, you know, because these conversations bring up all new ideas, all new emotions, all new concepts. Mm-hmm. And really that's when, you know, it's so interesting for the artist to be present, to be able to start that dialogue, to be able to put into words. And I know that it's not easy for all artists to put into words what they wanted to express, but sometimes it's just a little bit of a trigger, and then it starts, and it gets really interesting to listen.
Yeah, yeah. Federico says, thank you for mentioning Susan Cain and introversion not being an excuse. Yeah. Colleen says, I love what Catherine just said, and would add a quote from Pema Chodron, which helps me. Being comfortable in the uncertainty of the present moment. And that's all there is there. So being comfortable in the uncertainty of the present moment. Sure, sure. Thomas Marsh says, I think people get too distracted with making a living to realize that the power that they possess in art. So how do you get past how does one get around that inhibition about being constantly worried about making a living? And I think that's sort of the whole crux of what The Abundant Artist is about, right? Is helping artists make a living so that they don't have to worry about that, so that they can get to this dialogue and this moment of conversation. Any thoughts there? And I will say that on Thursday, when we're going to do a webinar, and I'm actually going to do a presentation around some of the things that I've seen artists do that have been the most powerful in terms of making a living. But I would love to hear from the two of you, how do you embrace your power as an artist when you also have the practical considerations of making a living?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit what is before the chicken or the egg. Uh-huh. And it pulls you, many times the day-to-day problems and needs brings you to do it the other way around. But I think the focus as an artist is in producing their best work without consideration to the money. When you spend so much time in a piece, you cannot be thinking, now how many hours is this going to be worthwhile commercially?
Sure.
That ruins you. I think your focus should be in producing your best art you can ever produce. And if you do that constantly, and you have also a businessman frame of mind when you are not creating, you can make it a business with the tips that Cory gives
all
the time.
The same way we tell people to separate work and family, I think you need to separate creation and the business. So you can't be thinking, I could not agree more with what Leonardo just said. You cannot be creating with the mindset of, is this going to sell, or I'm going to create this because it's going to sell. You need to create what you want to create, and then when you take time out of the studio, and then you work on your business plan, and then you work on the action items you've developed to sell your art. And when you're working on your business plan, you're not planning on what you're going to create to sell later when you're in the studio. So those are two separate things, and those two hats. Like when you're in your living room playing with your kids, you shouldn't be worrying about what you're going to, you know, do for your business. You should be totally focused on being with your children. So.
Yeah, although I have to say that's also an ideal way of doing it.
Of course! I'm always thinking about my business,
as an artist, sometimes you do have the need of create something that will sell because you need to survive out of that. And I don't think that is wrong or anything like that. I have done it a lot. But I think you need to be like conscious of this difference. And maybe you will find, to be able to maintain your great art, maybe at the beginning stages, you will have to do other art that you can live off it, a little bit more commercial. Like in my case, when I was young, I love cars, and I used to do paintings and drawings of Ferraris especially, and then I was sold it in the agencies, and the agency will propose to the owners of the Ferraris a portrait of their car, and I survived many years painting cars, which was great, but was not a great way of, profound art.
Sure. So for Leonardo, this brings something up that I wanted to ask you about a minute ago. So you mentioned that artists need to be doing their best work, right?
Yes.
And I think that there is a school of thought that says your best work is the most technically competent work. Or the most technically accurate work. But I think that best work also has a different meaning, and that is the work that comes from, like, that you should be saying something with your art, that it's not just something that you made because you think that people might buy it, or something that you've made because that's what you think you should make rather than the work you actually want to make. So how does an artist give themselves permission to make their best work, to say what they want to say with their art? I'd be curious to know what the two of you think of that.
I think simply focusing on that, and as you say, how giving the permission, just grant you the permission to do that as an artist. Say, this time I'm going to create this just because I want to say something. Mm-hmm. Not thinking about the commercial or other things, no? Just do what you feel is right.
Yeah. I had a few years ago, I guess it wasn't that long ago, I had a coaching client who I have so many examples of this and I'm trying to pick the right one. So there's an artist that I worked with recently. She made technically brilliant florals, oil paintings. And you look at her work and it's great. Her technique is there. The shading is right. The colors are perfect. But she was selling them for very, very small amounts of money. She was on Etsy, and basically she was just cranking these out And when we sat down and did the math on what she was making, she was essentially making like, I think, $5 or $6 an hour for the amount of time that she was putting into the work that she was making and selling. And I asked her, well, what, you know, is this what you really want to be making? And she said, well, no, I have this other idea for this series of work. And so I'll just tell you, like, so she has the florals. She showed me some other pieces of work. She showed me these paintings that she had done of weeds, right? They were dandelions and milkweed and other plants that people would pluck out of their garden and throw away, right? And they were equally technically good and equally beautiful. And it was really interesting to see a weed rendered in the same way that we would render a rose or a hydrangea or something like that. And I asked, okay, well, where does this come from? And she said, well, she's, again, going back to introverts, she's a deeply introverted person to the point where she actually has a real problem talking to anybody at all. And it's something that she's worked on for a long time. And these paintings of weeds actually were her saying, hey, I'm beautiful too, even though I'm not like all these other people. And then we started talking about it, and it actually came out of, she feels like a lot of people, a lot of women especially, are not recognized for being the beautiful people that they are. And so these weeds that she was painting were her own statement that there is beauty in all kinds of places that we don't see. And just having that conversation with her, I'm so excited for her because her and all her work changed. She started giving herself permission to do all this other stuff. She's stepped into her confidence in demanding more money for her work, and her collector base is following her, right? Like the people who've purchased her work, they are, some of them went away because they're like, oh, I don't want to pay for that. But other people are coming along because they're catching the vision of what she's doing. And I can't say her name yet because she's not ready to go public with that. But that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about, that artists, the things that come out of your paintbrush and onto your canvas, this stuff matters. And it doesn't just matter to you as the artist. It matters to the people who see it. And if they can catch that story, magical things can happen. And Catherine, I want to ask you, you know, you've got this experience doing PR for artists. You've got this experience working with some galleries and stuff. What is the process like there for teasing that kind of story out with the artists that you've worked with?
Or working with the media, you mean?
Not just the media, but helping the artist figure out what their story is in their work. And we can talk about pitching that story later, but I want to know, how do you tease that story out?
Well, the first time when we spoke and you told me about this webinar, the first thing I said to you, I said, oh, you want to talk about their why? And you said, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think, and the story you just told us is exactly that, right? It's the why. Why are you doing this? And what is your bigger vision of the work that you do? And how do you see yourself? And what is it that you want to have as a legacy, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about legacy a lot. What is your legacy as an artist? What is it that you want people to remember you for? Is it the flowers, or is it, you know, the weeds, or for every artist, it's different. But I think the first thing is really going through that process. And I'm always surprised with what comes out of it. And also the responses I get when I talk to artists and they go through the process and they say, oh, my God, I never really took the time to sit down with a pen and paper and just write it all out. And I said, write it all. Just don't censor yourself. Write it all. Because we think of things, but we don't take the time to write it. You know, take an actual pen and take the time to journal about it. And it's going to evolve. It's going to evolve because once you start writing, you can't stop. So it's going to evolve and it's going to change. But it's important to start putting things on paper. And then we can work through it and clean it up and see what we want to keep and see what we want to focus on and give that vision really something that's coherent and that people will resonate with and see who also will resonate with, right? It's not going to resonate with everyone. Like you said, some people did not follow her, and that's perfectly fine. You can't take that personally. Some people will not follow you. That's perfect. But those who will, they will become fans of you for a very, very long time. And those are the people you want to have in your tribe, right? Mm-hmm. So that's really the first part, I think, is being very clear on your why and your vision.
Leonardo, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you keep an art journal?
No.
No.
I don't. Sometimes I take a few notes, but I should do that a lot more. Now that I was listening, yes. I will adopt it. I like it.
I tell them, I don't care on what you write it. It can be on a napkin. It can be on the cereal box. I want you to start writing things down when you think about them, because you'll want to get back. And it's so exciting a year down the road or 5 years down the road, just finding that piece of paper and reading what you wrote and realizing that your vision has really started to come to life just because you really put it out there. And then you look back on it and you're like, oh, wow, it's moving forward. It's changed, but I see it coming to life. Okay. You should try it.
Yes, definitely.
That I will say, for what it's worth, Catherine, I will say that that is something that I encourage all of my students to do. And when we do our How to Sell Your Art Online workshop, I actually start there. I require all of my students to start writing about their why. I love that. So thank you.
And sometimes it seems like kind of obvious, like, oh, I know. No, write it down and you'll be surprised what you find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you might find something completely different. Right? Like you might discover that you are not making the art that you actually want to be making. I think that's a scary realization for a lot of artists, to realize that maybe you've gotten complacent, or maybe you've been too afraid to tackle the subjects that you actually want to tackle. Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Thomas Marsh says, one observation I've seen is when artists post their sketches from their sketchbooks and they are just meticulously rendered pieces. I've heard that some feel there is an aspect of accountability when an artist puts their best stuff out there, even when it's just a sketch. I'm not sure what that means exactly, Thomas.
I guess he means sometimes I sketch and the sketch is ugly and I don't show that one. When I show my sketches, I make sure those are my best sketches.
That's interesting. Okay, yeah, that's funny. I could totally see that. Jacobina Trump says, artists are the most powerful people on earth. We can visualize and imagine anything. As artists, I think we really need to make a huge leap forward. Yeah. So Shannon says, the money barrier. Many people do not understand the value of art, so they are not always sold on a fair wage price of an original piece of art. This is such an interesting question, or an interesting point, because Shannon, I would flip this around and say, part of the reason that artists struggle financially, and I'd be interested to hear what the two of you have to think about this, Leonardo and Catherine. I think that part of the reason that so many artists struggle is I think that the artists themselves actually don't value their work for where it should, for what it should be worth. There's essentially three reasons that artists struggle. One is they're just technically not very good. Which actually I don't think is all that common. I think there's a lot of artists who are actually technically pretty good, and I don't think that's the biggest reason that their work doesn't sell. Two is just a lack of knowledge. Like, I just don't know how to market myself. I don't know what to do. And three is mindset. Not believing that their work is worth what they should be charging for it, and not putting themselves at the front of their ideas and not taking ownership of what their art is actually saying and meaning to people. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's very true. And I think both points are true. Also, what he's saying, in that there is people who don't appreciate art and they are not willing to pay money for art. But that's okay. There is enough people that do appreciate art. So maybe you just need to open up a little bit a bigger circle of contacts to show it to more that will appreciate it. But generally speaking, you focus on those who do appreciate it, and what Corey's saying is totally true. Totally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more with the 3 points you said. I totally agree. And, you know, not everybody values sports cars, and not everybody value, you know, eating in fine food restaurants. And so, I mean, it's at some point you need to find the tribe that's right for you and for the work. And even within art, I mean, there's art for such different kinds of people. So, mm-hmm. Yes, there are people who don't appreciate art. They never will. And I don't recommend spending too much time trying to convince them. And I recommend trying to just nurture the relationships with the people who do appreciate your work. Not even art in general, but your work more specifically.
Yeah, that is interesting, isn't it? There are a lot of galleries and artists who are all trying to market themselves to the same tiny group of people, right? Like they think that everybody thinks that, oh, if I want to make a living, I have to sell a canvas for $100,000 and I have to sell it to, you know, this tiny group of very wealthy people that frequent the art galleries. But there's a whole other world of people out there who maybe they're not professional collectors, but maybe they're interested in the kind of work that you make. What do you think?
Yeah, totally. As you mentioned at the beginning, I have a lot of public through my YouTube channels and stuff like that. And I normally don't sell the drawings that I do in the tutorials because mm-hmm. it's not what I do generally for my exhibits. And also uh-huh. because I envision at some point doing a big exhibit showing all the drawings in the tutorials, etc. But even then, every week or so, or sometimes more, I get asked to sell my drawings to them. Uh-huh. And it's what you are saying. You know, when enough people see them, there are some that will want them. So I think the problem is mainly that one of reaching out to more people, generally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Reaching out to more people, reaching out to the right people, and also people who start collecting. When they start collecting, I haven't heard a lot of people, the first artwork that they buy, if you ask a collector, how did you start, the first piece they bought, they maybe bought it for $200 or $500, and then next time, like, they felt really good about it, so they built, because even collectors need to build their confidence, not just artists, mm-hmm. collectors too, so they buy a piece at $500, and then maybe $2,000, and then maybe $10,000, so if you nurture relationships, if you have a good network, if you're building these contacts, then you're going to grow with them and they're going to grow with you. So maybe now you're not selling at, you know, the price that you'd like to sell, but as the collector builds their confidence, you will also, and at some point, you know, the prices will increase. So
yeah,
you shouldn't worry too much about that part.
Growing with your audience.
Grow with your audience, yeah.
Exactly. And it's good that the prices do increase because the art also is an investment for the collector. And I thought it was very interesting what you said the other day, Corey, of this girl that was selling one drawing or painting a day and every day will double the price, I think.
I was talking about Jolie Guillebeau, who would she'd make a series of 100 paintings. And on day one, she sold it for $1, and day two was $2, day three was $3. So she'd increase the price $1 each day.
$1 each day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's such a smart idea. And I thought of doing it also a little bit differently. But I think it's a strategy that artists can adopt. The fact that if you guarantee to the person buying it that the next day is going to be more expensive or next month, I have my paintings in a gallery and I give them a list. This month they cost this much and then next month will go up 5% or whatever and next month blah, blah, blah. And they know that in a year they earn 50% or something, but for sure, if you could do that somehow also with galleries or something, I think that would be a great strategy to sell your art mm-hmm. as an investment.
Yeah. Well, and that's what happens when you get into the higher end galleries, right? Like art starts to become a investment that can be traded. That might be a little bit outside the scope of this conversation, but
yeah,
it's a really interesting conversation. In last week's discussion, I mentioned a couple of books that people should go read if they want to talk about that, if they want to learn about the investment side of fine art. There's a couple of interesting books, The $12 Million Stuffed Shark and some others.
Excellent book.
Yeah. So,
and even not just for the investment, but also I find that I speak to artists and they don't, the market is difficult to understand. It's very opaque. It's not transparent. We all know that. But it's your responsibility to learn about it and understand it, because if you want to have conversations with collectors and be able to talk about your story, share your vision, but also bring them into your world and make them understand why it's important, you need to be able to understand the market. So that book, highly recommend it.
Yeah. And when we post the recording of today's conversation, it'll be on the same page as last week's conversation. And I'll have some links to those books and some other things. So
great.
Cool.
Going back to the leadership as an artist, I want to mention historically, artists have been prime on the shaping of the world, and especially, for example, when the world was in the Dark Ages and the Middle Ages, and there was really oppression all over about knowledge and etc. Actually, were the artists who brought light to the world and started that big change that then a little after politicians and wealthy people, especially by sponsoring artists, is that created the Renaissance and the Enlightenment again. Mm-hmm. And, with Dante Alighieri with the Divine Comedy, mm-hmm. was one of the first ones, and in the arts, Giotto, the architect and artist Giotto, that started doing something different and bringing knowledge to the people generally. I just want to make the point that there were artists, the one who brought light to the world again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that idea so much. So as the one American in this panel of three right now, I'll just say that my country right now needs leadership and needs something to change the direction that we're going right now.
This is a problem worldwide, Corey.
every country and every place has its own issues, and you can be a leader in a very small community. You can be a leader nationally or in the world. But for myself, I think that I would love to see a Dante or a Michelangelo or a Raphael emerge in the United States who can point us to a better state than what we're in right now.
That's pretty true. And lacking a huge figure like that, I think we can make it up with many smaller ones that can be us. One of the reasons I want to really have a lot of reach with my YouTube videos and with my page is not because I want to be famous just for me, which is not bad also, but one of the main reasons, truly speaking, is because if a lot of people know you, follow you, admire you, then your words will be listened a lot more, right? You will say something and millions will listen. And I think that's very important. Also, when we were talking about the power of an artist and now talking about the responsibility of an artist, I think now you know you have the power in your hands as an artist. And now we need to understand that we have the responsibility to use that, make yourself known, become famous, not for you, because then what you say is going to be heard by people, by a lot of people, and you can influence in the good way a lot of people if you become a famous artist. So if you don't want to do it for you, do it for people.
Yeah. So I imagine everybody's going, okay, I get it. I want to be a leader. I'm ready to be famous. Catherine, how do we do it? We got 15 minutes left.
15 minutes left.
I know your specialty is developing media relationships. So let's say you're an artist who you know what your story is, you know what you want to say, you have a message that you believe in with all your heart. What is the best way to cultivate relationships with media so that you can get that message out there?
Okay, well, you already explained the first step. So that's the first step. You need to be very clear on what your message is, what you want to communicate, how is your message also different from others or similar to others, right? So if you have something that can be explained throughout what others are saying too, that's important. The second part is really to find the media, the people who are a good fit, right? The same way we talk about finding the collectors that are the good fit for you, it's to find the right media that are the good fit. Depending on what you want the leadership to be about, you know, like it's really very like vast, the question you're asking me, mm-hmm. Corey, because sometimes it can be something that's happening locally that you want to get involved with. So then looking at smaller, more local publications is a really good way to start. Sometimes partnering up with a bigger organization where you can bring your voice and your work. I've been working with an artist who's been very involved with children's cancer organizations, and she's very involved there, and she's developed all sorts of initiatives and gotten involved with them, and they've helped her get visibility because for them it's also good, right? So it's kind of a partnership where they give her this platform and she supports them with her art, and they give her this platform to express and share her vision and share the legacy that she wants to leave, right? So there's different ways of doing it. So you can do it, like I said, either identifying the media that would be interested, or being partnering with bigger organizations where you can share your voice. Connecting with them, okay? There's nothing better than building relationships, okay? If, like, PR, it's about relationships. So media will be interested in you if, one, they know you, second, they understand your message, and third, if they see a way that they can fit your message and bring it across and that it's going to interest their audience. Because at the end of the day, media have to sell newspapers or show or commercials or advertising, right? So what you have to say needs to resonate and appeal with their audience. So if you're able to package your story in a way that is either timely or resonates with their audience, and you're able to share that with the reporters, that's how you're going to get your story out there. But it's all about first connecting with them and getting them to know you and like your work and be interested. And so, and how do you do that? Well, social media has become like huge to connect with reporters, right? Mm-hmm. And how can you, before pitching a story, get to know them, get to really see what they're doing, comment on their story, share their stories, help them. Sometimes reporters, if you connect with them and you're really following their work on social media, sometimes they'll ask for support or they'll ask a question. I'm writing a story about this. Would you know somebody who knows that? So,
Catherine, I want to interrupt for a second. I want to make sure that we get this real clear, because what you're dropping is like these massively valuable tips. I want to break it out so that people really understand. No. It might be a little too much. So I want to break it down just a little bit. So,
okay.
So let's say that I am an artist and I live in Portland, Oregon, because I live in Portland, and I think that there's a local news organization that would really love my story about my art that comes out of a place where I am concerned about children's cancer, right? Let's just say just say that's my story. So I know that I can find some reporters on social media. So maybe I go to the local news website and I find a reporter who has written about cancer, or who has written about art, or something in that area, right? And not the business reporter, and not the reporter who covers current events or whatever, but reporter who covers those things.
Yeah.
And then I reach, and then I find that reporter, and then what? How do I figure out which social media platform is the best to follow that reporter on?
Okay, so to follow reporters, the best social media platform is Twitter.
Okay.
So that's the best one to follow them. Usually on their Twitter handle, they'll tell you how you can get in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and usually the best way to pitch your idea is through email.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to pitch to an, a reporter is A, to tell them, you know, I've seen your work. I think it's amazing. I've seen this article you wrote on this topic, and it made me think of you because let me introduce myself.
Mm-hmm.
My name is XYZ. I do this, and I would like to talk to you about this idea, this project, this mission I have. If you are partnering with an organization that can give you extra, you know, manpower to help you to get more visibility, even better. If there's something timely happening, I'm doing a show next week. I'd love to invite you because of the type of articles you write and the type of audience you cater to. I think it would be an amazing fit. Your audience would really, really enjoy knowing the work that I do and what I've done to help raise awareness on cancer research, basically. Is that a little more clear?
Yeah, that's really helpful. So basically, I look at the journalist's byline, which, and the byline is just the part at the top or the bottom of the article that says this article was written by Corey Huff. And
exactly.
And then in some places I've seen it'll say you can find Corey Huff on Twitter at whatever their handle is, right?
Yeah. There's a little bit of research. People tell me, oh, but it takes a long time. Yeah, that's why the PR people are paid the big bucks, because it takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, you got to do the research. Yeah, that's funny.
So, you know, you got to do your research. And, I mean, if there's one thing, maybe I went a little overboard, but if there's one thing you need to take away is present a story idea it doesn't matter if you think it's a good idea. It needs to be something that's going to be appealing to the audience of the media you're going to connect with. If there's one thing you can take away today, that would be the one.
Cool. So I go and I find the journalist on Twitter, and I see. Now, would you say that it's a good idea to find them on Twitter and look at their bio, and their bio will say contact me CoreyHuff@gmail.com or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then just immediately pitch them, or should I try building a relationship with them on Twitter first?
So it depends. Mm-hmm. It depends. If you have something that's timely, like I said, I have a show opening next week, and I'd really love for you to come because I have, you know, this organization and that's coming in and it's going to be a big party or whatever, then do it. Do your pitch. Do it now. If it's more of like a human interest kind of piece, getting to know the work I do, wanting to ultimately maybe invite the journalist to come to your studio, that can be pretty much at any time, then I would do the relationship building kind of thing, because you'll almost want it to be the journalist's idea,
right,
really, than yours.
Right. So you're retweeting the journalist's interesting stuff, maybe tweeting at them and saying, hey, I really loved that article.
Exactly. Have you seen this? This happened recently. Thought you might be interested.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
Yeah. So if a journalist is writing about other local artists, then you might thank them for writing about XYZ artist that you like, and then say, hey, have you checked out so-and-so? Their work is very similar to the artist that you just profiled, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, those are great ways. I love that.
Try to keep it positive.
Yes. Why'd you write about that artist? He's terrible. You should check out this
artist. You
should
have written about me instead.
Don't do that. That's what we're saying, is don't do that. Okay.
I have a quick question about Catherine. Can I?
Yeah.
Ask about this point, because sometimes when I am very interested in a newspaper or even an editor, I just call them up on the phone. But what do you think about that?
Well, it depends. Calling on the phone is great, but I know that a lot of people are not too comfortable calling people like out of the blue, like a cold call. Like, my experience, when I say call him up, they're like, oh, really? Do I and also, calling a newsroom, it's really, you better have your pitch ready, and I recommend to practice, because when the person answers, it's like, yeah. And then you're like, oh, am I talking to Mr. da da da? Yeah. They're not going to help you at all. They're not going to prompt you, and you better know what you're talking about, and you better be able to say it in, not like I did earlier, you better be able to say it in 15 seconds, because it can be very intimidating. I personally prefer to do the email, and then at least you can call and follow up and say, maybe you didn't catch, I sent you an email a few days ago, maybe you didn't catch it, right. I was mentioning this, this, and that. Oh, yeah, I think I saw it, or something like that. But
frequently, if I'm calling somebody to follow up on something like that, I will actually write down what I'm going to say before I call them, so that I can at least get through the first 30 seconds of the conversation. Yeah. Hey, Mr. Editor, this is Corey Huff from The Abundant Artist. I sent you an email a couple days ago about this story. I just wanted to make sure that you saw it. I think it'd be really good for your readers because of XYZ reasons. Any questions?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
When could we send, or like an open question, like when could we send it? Set up a time to speak, and if you cannot find the email address, for instance, you can always call the reception of the media, and the person at the desk. You don't even have to introduce yourself. You don't have to say anything. Just say, "I'm trying to get in touch with this reporter, could you give me his email address?" And they'll give it to you. This is public information.
Yeah. And I can't stress enough, like, reporters get hundreds of emails, especially reporters for major publications. They might get hundreds of emails per hour, right? Like, if you write for the Times, you're going to get a lot of emails and pitches. So having a descriptive subject line that's not like, "Hi from Corey," like... right, like a subject line that's like art opening on March 22nd, right? And then a 2-sentence email that says what it is, and like that kind of stuff is really, really helpful, because I know a lot of times for me, if I get an email and it's like 5 paragraphs of solid text, a lot of times I'll just archive it and not read it because I just don't have the time. And if you can't distill what you're going to say into a few sentences, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I cannot stress enough the importance also of looking at more local and starting with smaller publication or even blogs, because right today with social media, they get a lot of reach, and like not everybody's going to get into the Times, and maybe the Times is not even your audience. So it's good to look at, you know, what is your message? What do you want to say? Who do you want to say it to? And find alternative and original ways to partner up with bloggers, with smaller publications, websites, local. And that'll build your confidence, too, before going to the bigger ones. And usually the bigger ones, they're looking at what the smaller ones are, what the bloggers are saying, because usually the bloggers are very innovative, and they talk about topics that the big ones don't talk about, and they'll pick up on those, and then that'll give you extra visibility, and then they might even call you before you even call them.
Yeah. There are about 300 art-related publications that I am aware of, and probably about 30 blogs that focus specifically on fine art. Hyperallergic, Boom, This is Colossal. There's a whole bunch of them that have enormous followings, and you don't have to get into the New York Times art section to get featured. Now, some of those blogs only focus on New York or San Francisco or whatever, but there are lots of them out there for you. So we're about out of time, but I want to wrap up by saying that on Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific time, we're actually going to do another discussion like this, but I'm actually going to give a presentation. We'll have visual slides and all that kind of stuff. We're going to do some case studies and show some artists who have implemented some of the things that Catherine's talking about, who have done some of the kinds of marketing that Leonardo's done with his YouTube channel, and artists who have tremendous followings online, who are making a great living with their work. And it's going to be a very brass tacked, practical presentation on Thursday. So If you're registered for this email or for the, if you're here right now listening to this, you'll get a notification about Thursday's webinar. Leonardo, if somebody wanted to follow up with you and see and get more information about your work and the kind of things you talked about today, where would they go?
Sure. My YouTube channel is called Fine Art Tips. Fine Art Tips.
Yes, Fine Art Dash Tips. Yep.
Dash Tips. And I just published my mobile app. So also, if you have an iPhone or Android, you can download it in Fine Art Tips.
Nice. And Catherine, yep. How would somebody follow up with you?
You can find me on my website, theartistentrepreneur.co, or on Facebook, my Facebook group, The Artist Entrepreneur Network.
And there's 6,000 members in The Artist Entrepreneur Network, right?
7,000.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a great Facebook group.
Yes. We're having a lot of fun.
Cool.
Getting visibility.
Yeah.
We'll join it.
All right. Thank you so much. Leonardo, Catherine, thank you so much for being here. We're over time, so I want to respect your time and let you go. Thank you so much, everybody who joined us. And
thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks so much, everybody.
That's great. Thank you.
Take care.